Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for September 13th, 2016. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'll be talking with Benjamin Cravat, John Tejaro, and Megan Blewett about proteins in immune cells that are modified by the drug DMF. Dimethyl fumarate, or DMF, is a drug that's used to treat autoimmune diseases, but how it affects the immune system isn't well understood. Several possible explanations for its mode of action have been proposed, including its ability to modify cysteine residues in proteins. Benjamin Cravat, John Tejaro, and Megan Blewett at the Scripps Research Institute looked at the proteins in human T cells that reacted with DMF. One of the proteins they identified was PKC-theta, which functions in T cell activation. When PKC-theta was modified by DMF, T cells couldn't be fully activated. Knowing what proteins are targeted by DMF is an important first step in understanding why DMF is therapeutic and why it causes the side effects that have been reported. A better understanding of the biochemistry of DMF may enable the development of similar drugs that deliver the therapeutic benefits of DMF without the side effects. Cravat, Tejaro, and Blewett spoke to me from La Jolla, California. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Hello.
DMF is used to treat some autoimmune diseases. In what clinical context is it effective? John?
Currently, it's effective in treating multiple sclerosis and psoriasis.
What are some of the side effects of this drug?
I mean, there's a number of side effects, and I think a lot of them are, or most of them are minor, flushing, rashes on the skin in the context of psoriasis, and then abdominal pain, diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, or more of the minor symptoms. But there's one more dangerous symptom that's very uncommon, but it does happen, and that's called PML, which is a very rare brain infection, which is perpetuated by suppressing the immune response.
How well understood is it how DMF has its therapeutic effects, and likewise, how it has these side effects?
So,
Ben Cravat.
Yeah, DMF is this very small electrophilic molecule, so one possibility is that it reacts with certain residues like cysteines on proteins, which are nucleophilic, to alter the function of the proteins that bear those cysteines, and as a consequence affects those functions of the proteins to produce clinical effects. Alternatively, it has been proposed that the molecule DMF can be hydrolyzed. Well, it certainly is hydrolyzed in vivo to produce monomethyl fumarate, which is a less reactive molecule but may also have signaling properties of its own. But ultimately, the mechanism of action of DMF in terms of how it produces an immunosuppressive effect for therapeutic benefit is largely unknown.
So as you just mentioned, one of the hypotheses about how DMF functions or how it has its therapeutic effects is that it's converted to MMF in the body and that it's the MMF that actually has the biological activity and maybe not the DMF. When you addressed this question, what did you find?
Of course, we cannot exclude the possibility that conversion of DMF to MMF is in some way related to the in vivo activity of the drug. But in our cellular system, where we compared DMF and MMF directly for their effects on T-cell activation, we found that DMF was capable of suppressing T-cell activation while MMF was not. So I think that largely excludes at least a G-protein coupled receptor mechanism of action of MMF in that biology. And that is something that could be a mechanism of action for DMF/MMF in vivo, but certainly not, I think, in our T-cell studies where we were trying to mimic the immunosuppressive effect in a cell culture model.
But you did find in your experiments that DMF can modify cysteine residues in proteins in T cells.
That's right.
Obviously, not all cysteine residues that are in all proteins are going to be accessible for chemical modification, right? Some are going to be buried inside of the protein and therefore inaccessible. How did you identify which proteins in T cells could be modified by DMF?
Right. We used a chemical proteomic technique developed in the Cravat lab to quantitatively profile the reactivity of cysteine residues in primary human T cells. In brief, the cells are treated with the electrophile of interest, in this case DMF, and then with a broadly thiol-reactive iodoacetamide probe. Cysteines that are covalently modified by DMF treatment are rendered unreactive to iodoacetamide, and we read out the loss of iodoacetamide labeling by mass spectrometry. So the greater the reduction in iodoacetamide labeling, the more sensitive a cysteine residue is to DMF treatment.
How many proteins did you identify as targets of DMF in human T cells?
We identified roughly 50 proteins that contain DMF-sensitive cysteine residues in primary human T cells.
How many of those proteins could potentially account for the biological effects of DMF?
DMF is almost certainly acting through a pleiotropic mechanism. We've yet to establish exactly how many of these DMF-sensitive residues need to be modified in order for DMF to produce its immunomodulatory effects. But it is unlikely that there is a single residue that fully accounts for DMF's effects.
One of the proteins that you found that's modified by DMF is protein kinase C theta, or PKC theta. How did DMF affect the function of that protein in T cells?
Using our chemical proteomic technique, we found that DMF covalently modifies two cysteine residues in the C2 domain of PKC theta, which is an important protein in the T cell activation process. We collaborated with Amnon Altman at the La Jolla Institute of Allergy and Immunology to show that these two cysteine residues are required for the association of PKC theta with CD28, which is another important protein in T cell signaling. These two residues are also required for proper T cell activation. This is exciting because, to our knowledge, these cysteine residues have no prior functional annotation. And as a result, these data provide new insights into PKC theta biology as well as potential launch points for new immunosuppressive agents.
When you take the drug, of course, T cells aren't the only types of cells that are going to be exposed to DMF. Are there other side effects of DMF that could be mediated by DMF acting on proteins in other cell types besides T cells?
Certainly. I think
John Tejera.
The T cells were sort of a proof in principle that we started with. And, you know, DMF has been reported to suppress other immune cell types such as dendritic cells, macrophages. We even have some preliminary data of our own in other cell types. And I think, you know, looking in those other cell types may reveal other targets. Obviously, certain cells express certain proteins. So in a T cell, you might not hit a certain protein that's expressed in dendritic cells. But if you run the isotope on dendritic cells, you may find other proteins. And then, you know, it's been reported that DMF has neuroprotective effects. So it'd be interesting to look at neurons. As well as a lot of the gastrointestinal effects, it'd be interesting to know what's happening in cells of the gastrointestinal tract, particularly in the context of these side effects, diarrhea and vomiting.
Ultimately, where do you hope this analysis will lead?
So we believe this analysis is important from a future directions perspective in multiple ways.
Ben Cravat.
One, as John had noted earlier, DMF does have some pretty severe side effects in rare cases, and it is also administered to humans at very high doses. And so, in principle, if one could understand whether there were specific subsets of proteins that were primarily or principally responsible for DMF's mechanism of action, one could create more selective drugs that target those proteins, so therefore lower doses of drug need to be administered, and it may be possible to produce greater beneficial effects in diseases like psoriasis, multiple sclerosis, while minimizing side effects. From a basic science perspective, there are numerous natural products and bioactive molecules that have an electrophilic property like DMF that have been shown over the years to have immunosuppressive properties. And I would say, by and large, most of them remain mechanistically poorly understood. And so one of our lab's larger goals is to try to understand whether do each of these molecules have distinct mechanisms of action to produce their immunosuppressive effects, or might they converge to act through a distinct set of sort of electrophile sensors that T cells and maybe other immune cells or even other cells in general have evolved to recognize and respond to such molecules to produce immunoregulatory effects. And so that's something that we'll continue to pursue with the types of technologies that Megan described.
So you could expand this technology to look at the effects of other electrophilic small molecules.
Absolutely. I mean, the technology itself is already kind of dialed in to do that, right? It's really the competitive agent that you apply. And so if you replace DMF with another electrophilic drug, you can then inventory its interactions with the T cell proteome or other immune cell proteomes, and then look at the overlap, right? Does DMF target a totally distinct set of cysteines relative to other electrophilic drugs that affect T cell biology, or do they converge on a discrete set of shared targets?
That was Benjamin Cravat, John Tejera, and Megan Blewett discussing a paper published in the September 13th issue of Science Signaling by Blewett and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.